my perception of Chief Lentino is that he, what he understands is power, and that he perceives the Toronto LGBT community as being quite powerful within the city, and a community that he has to take seriously.
Although I really love it when a straight fan or reviewer calls my work universal, it also kind of bugs me. Because behind that word universal, I can't help but sense this lurking fear of difference. It's like saying, as long as there's some way I can identify with you, then you're okay.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Stockwell Day dawns for Canadian right-wingers, Toronto's top cop faces the fire about his London witch hunt, and drawing on lesbian culture with Dykes to watch out for his cartoonist. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Donald Herman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 15th, 2000. Canada's most conservative national party has voted by a landslide to make its most conservative candidate its leader. Stockwell Day has never served in the national parliament, but is now the leader of the new Canadian Alliance Party. He has a record of anti-gay activism in Alberta's provincial parliament and cabinet that's bound to feature strongly as the ruling Liberals campaign against him. He opposed the addition of gays and lesbians to Alberta's human rights law, and when the Canadian Supreme Court required that they be read into the law, Day called for invoking the so-called notwithstanding clause to override the court. Early in his political career, he opposed opening military service to gays and lesbians and called AIDS a warning from God against sodomy. As social services minister, he denied foster placements to gays and lesbians. As treasurer, he tried to cancel a small grant to the Red Deer Museum for assembling materials on the history of gays and lesbians in the area. In the Alliance leadership campaign, he won the support of anti-gay religious right groups, one of which criticized one of Day's opponents for including gays in the top ranks of his campaign team. Day has tried to downplay social issues in his campaign, preferring a libertarian approach of getting government out of personal lives. More recently, he's actually supported legal registered partnerships as long as they're open to any economically interdependent couple, regardless of the nature of their relationship. While some gays and lesbians vowed to quit the Alliance Party if Day became leader, his flat tax proposal has appealed to some others who prioritize their economic interests, and his attractive youthful image has appealed even to some gay men who reject his politics. Day has been a Pentecostal lay preacher and Christian school administrator, although he has promised not to force his religious views on the party.
Jens Torstein Olsen has become the first openly partnered gay pastor in Norway's Lutheran State Church. The Church of Norway's National Church Council in 1997 adopted a policy explicitly barring non-celibate gays and lesbians from serving in roles requiring ordination. Olsen himself had lost his post as a deacon consultant in 1988 when he revealed his partnership to the National Church Council. He then sued the church for reinstatement, but lost. This year, though, he was the unanimous choice of Oslo's Mayor Stua congregation. The Oslo Bishops' Council approved the appointment by a 4-3 vote, but the three dissenters appealed to the Ministry of Churches and Education. Because the Church of Norway is the state church, that department is technically the employer of all its clergy. This week, Minister of Churches and Education Trond Giske announced he had hired Olsen, declaring him the best qualified for the job. Giske said, "I had to decide whether the National Church Council can bind a bishop's council regarding an employment issue. The rules clearly state it cannot do so." The National Church Council responded that no one wants a government minister as the church's judge in theological questions. Seven of the church's 11 bishops had declared an emergency when the Oslo Bishops' Council approved Olsen's appointment in June, but they're not expected to meet to discuss it until August. Olsen and Norway's gays and lesbians are delighted. Norway has had registered partnerships giving same-gender couples almost all of the benefits of marriage since 1993. Olsen's partner is Oslo City Council member Erling Lay.
Recognition of same-gender couples was one of the biggest issues this week as the Episcopal Church USA held its triennial general convention in Denver. A special committee crafted a resolution that never used the words lesbian, gay, homosexual, or same-sex, referring instead to committed relationships other than marriage. It also never used the word bless, although it included a resolve to develop a ritual to express support for those relationships. The ritual clause fell just short of a two-thirds majority among delegations of laypeople, although it reached the two-thirds mark among delegations of priests. Bishops defeated it by a 57% majority. But both the House of Bishops and the House of Deputies overwhelmingly approved the other seven sections of the resolution, which acknowledge the existence of committed relationships other than marriage, list a set of values for both those relationships and for marriage, agrees to support those relationships, and affirms those on both sides of the issue. A spokesperson for the bishops called this a major shift in the thinking of the 2.4 million member denomination. The Episcopalian gay and lesbian group Integrity said, "With the passing of this resolution, the question is no longer whether our relationships exist or are of God. The question is how they should be celebrated." Noting the overwhelming support for the resolution, the trajectory is clearly toward full acceptance and celebration. The convention did nothing to change the current unofficial policy that each diocese can make its own decision whether to bless same-gender couples, which 61 of 108 dioceses do. Gays and lesbians were favorably acknowledged in many other items of business at the General Convention, and Integrity founder Dr. Louis Crew was elected to the denomination's National Executive Board.
A lesbian co-parent became the first in New York State to win a court order for visitation with the children her former partner bore by artificial insemination. Just 2 days later, an appeals court blocked that temporary order, but the co-parent's case for a permanent order will continue in August. Previous New York State rulings had found that a same-gender partner is not a parent under the state's domestic relations law.
In Belgium, lesbian Lily Hubrex won her long-running legal battle for custody of her own children. When she divorced her husband, an Antwerp court had called her lesbian partnership a serious fault. Last year, Belgium's highest court, the Cour de Cassation, ordered a new trial for her. Now a court in Antwerp has given her custody of her two youngest children, saying that a person's intimate orientation is no grounds for discrimination with regard to the exercise of parental rights.
Six men were executed in Saudi Arabia this week for what the Interior Ministry called committing the extreme obscenity of homosexuality and imitating women. All six were also convicted of molesting boys, while three were charged for having same-gender marriages. Three of the men were Saudi and three Yemeni. Saudi Arabia leads the world in executions under a strict interpretation of Islamic law. Amnesty International has complained that suspects there do not always get fair trials.
Sodomy reform was protested in Romania by 2,500 Christians who marched for 2 hours with banners reading "No to Homosexuality." Members of the Romanian Orthodox Church, who make up more than 80% of the population, were joined in the protest by Catholics and Baptists. Romania is once again attempting to meet Council of Europe standards of equal treatment for gays and lesbians, as it has since 1993, but gay and lesbian activists are still dissatisfied with the overbroad wording of the bill now in process.
British law reform may be in trouble, according to a report in London's Independent newspaper. Home Secretary Jack Straw will soon be publishing a bill to overhaul the UK's sex crimes laws, and it was expected to include repeal of the 19th century gross indecency law. That felony, punishable with up to 5 years in prison, applies only to gay men, making homosexual acts a crime if any third party is present. There were 354 reports of gross indecency last year. But unnamed inside sources said that Prime Minister Tony Blair met with Straw this week to ask him to delay gay sex law reform, fearing a backlash in the general elections. Straw is expected to go ahead with the rest of the reforms, but to say more consultation is needed on the gay-related laws.
In Namibia, a magazine which has called for equal treatment of gays and lesbians suffered an arson attack on its offices. Sister Namibia editor Liz Frank believes her group's pro-gay stand motivated the arson and that recent anti-gay rhetoric from President Sam Nujoma contributed to it. Namibia's National Society for Human Rights agreed. Just a week before, Nujoma had declared that gays and lesbians are ungodly, un-African, and destroying the nation.
And finally, as the 13th International AIDS Conference was held in Durban, South Africa's openly gay High Court Justice Edwin Cameron wowed a crowd of 10,000 with his keynote speech. He described his own experience with AIDS, noting that he would be dead by now if it were not for drugs, and saying, "I am here because I can afford to pay for life itself. My presence here embodies the injustice of AIDS because, on a continent in which 290 million Africans survive on less than $1 a day, I can afford medication costs of about $400 per month." He went on to criticize both governments and pharmaceutical companies for the lack of drug access, noting that India, Brazil, and Thailand have proven most drugs could be produced cheaply. He said, "No more than Germans in the Nazi era, no more than white South Africans during apartheid, can we say that we bear no responsibility for 30 million people in resource-poor countries who face death from AIDS unless medical care and treatment is made accessible to them."
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 15th, 2000. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Donald Herman.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
We've got an interview to watch out for with lesbian cartoonist Alison Bechdel later in the program. In 1996, the police department in London, Ontario, Canada, led by its then-chief Julian Fantino, trumpeted Operation Scoop, a major crackdown on what they called a child pornography ring. Several press conferences later, the investigation became Project Guardian and expanded to include adults having sex with teenage boys, sometimes for money. Project Guardian brought the police department extensive additional funding from the province. These actions were described by activists as nothing less than a witch hunt of a handful of gay men having private, consensual sex with younger men of legal age. Members of HALO, the Homophile Association of London, Ontario, Canada's oldest queer rights group, tried to meet with Police Chief Fantino at the time, but they say he was dismissive of their concerns that the community was being unfairly targeted. Two men were ultimately charged in the investigation of the so-called kiddie porn ring. Earlier this year, Fantino was selected to be the new chief of police in Toronto, much to the chagrin of that city's queer community, who believe Fantino never adequately responded to the problems they believe existed under his leadership in London. The Coalition for Lesbian and Gay Rights in Ontario arranged for a closed-door session with Fantino at Toronto Police Headquarters on July 14th to reiterate those concerns and to open lines of communication between the chief and the considerably larger and more powerful Toronto queer community. This Way Out's Greg Gordon spoke that day with Clarence Crossman, who participated in meetings with Fantino both in London in the mid-1990s and this week in Toronto. Crossman discusses the London investigations and the results of this week's session with Fantino in Toronto.
We were certainly concerned about how the police were orchestrating the investigation in the media. One thing that stood out as a grave concern for us was that the police raided one home of one of the men charged, brought boxes and boxes of videotapes, 800 videotapes, to a press conference and stated that they had done this major raid and they needed a million plus more dollars to expand the investigation. And in fact, that's the point at which it was called Project Guardian. Up to that point, it had been called Operation Scoop. And we then discovered that the videotapes that they were presenting at the press conference, box after box after box, as evidence of yet again this child porn ring, were in fact boxes of videos of movies and TV shows. And what pornography was there was legal pornography that had been purchased in Canada.
Was there any kind of questioning or investigation on the part of any of the mainstream media people to check on the truthfulness of what the police were saying?
Part part of our frustration was that the media accepted the orchestrated messages from the police without questioning them. And if there had only been a reporter at this press conference who said, have you viewed these tapes, or do you know for sure that these tapes, these 800 tapes, involve child pornography, those kinds of questions would have put a whole different tone on the press conference and on the expansion of the investigation.
Okay, so now, what happened today?
He expressed a willingness when asked if he would be open to talk about Project Guardian and how that still seemed to be raising questions about his leadership. He expressed a willingness to meet with the people who had those concerns.
And aside from revisiting the problems in London, was there anything else discussed?
Our concern was to say to the chief of police that we wanted, in terms of his leadership in Toronto, to hear very seriously any concerns presented by community leaders, and rather than dismiss them and be defensive in the way in which he was in London. And we also saw him attempt to divide and conquer, so that he sought people in London who he reported as being supportive of the police actions, and then taunted us with that reported support and challenged whether or not we had the kind of leadership we were claiming.
Now you're talking about this is what happened in London.
Yes, and on that basis we were now saying when there were leaders within the community in Toronto, even if there was not unanimity in terms of their concern, he needed to take the concerns of those leaders very seriously, not freeze them out, not belittle their concerns, not attempt to divide and conquer within the community.
And his response to that today?
My perception of Chief Fantino is that what he understands is power, and that he perceives the Toronto LGBT community as being quite powerful within the city, and a community that he has to take seriously. He stated that there were lessons learned from Project Guardian, and that his approach at this point would be different, and he pledged cooperation with the community and willingness to establish liaison with the community. And on that basis, we're willing to see if his actions follow through on the promises that he made.
Are there any follow-up meetings scheduled, or is it basically now just a wait-and-see situation for the community in Toronto?
The challenge now is for the LGBT community in Toronto to actually set up a liaison committee that works. There are several different organizations and several different leaders within the community here who are coming from sometimes quite different perspectives. So the challenge will be for them to establish a liaison community that will represent the diversity of views. And at this point, the ball is in the court of the LGBT community.
That was This Way Out's Greg Gordon talking with activist Clarence Crossman, one of five community members who held a closed-door meeting this week with Toronto's controversial new chief of police, Julian Fantino. As for the police chief himself, the Toronto Globe and Mail reported a police spokesperson saying that Fantino was honoring the spirit of the private meeting by refusing to discuss it with the press.
Hi, this is Tom Robinson reminding you that you're either listening to, discovering for the first time, or tuned right in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine with Lucia Chappell and Greg Gordon.
For more than 17 years, cartoonist Alison Bechdel has reflected and affectionately critiqued the lesbian community in her Dykes to Watch Out For comic strip. Firebrand Books has published 8 Dykes to Watch Out For collections, and the strip is syndicated in more than 50 publications in the U.S. and Canada. When she's not working on the comic strip, Bechtel is a popular guest speaker. She visited the University of Illinois this spring to talk about her lovable but flawed characters and about her own evolution as an artist and a lesbian. While there, Bechtel also spent some one-on-one time with This Way Out's Kimberly Cronick.
Alison Bechtel is a 39-year-old white middle-class lesbian living in rural Vermont. She admits that her strip's main character and heroine, Mo, is a lot like her, anxious, judgmental, and critical of others. Mo also embodies the values Alison assumed were part of being lesbian when she came out 20 years ago, anti-racism, anti-classism, and anti-big business. But she discovered that those values are not necessarily part of being lesbian. Mo and Alison are outsiders, and they're proud of being different.
I've always loved being an outsider, because if you're outside of a system, you can see more than the people who are inside it, just by definition. And that's always felt like a wonderful gift, kind of like the queer bonus. But at the same time, I can't deny that I also have this deep yearning to just be, you know, a regular schmo and to not have to be a big weirdo all the time.
Alison's characters have been dealing with the increasing assimilation of queer people into mainstream culture. In this installment, Mo and her longtime friends Lois and Ginger discuss ads in gay periodicals and on mainstream television in Europe. Mo is appalled by the courting of the gay market. Ginger expresses a different view.
Money talks, babe, and those full-page ads pay a lot of bills for a struggling little publication. I think it's a sign of progress that big companies aren't afraid to reach out to their gay customers.
And face it, a 60-second queer-positive McDonald's ad would do more for our visibility than 1,000 marches on Washington.
But at what cost? We're selling our souls. Consumerism will destroy this community faster than the FBI ever could. Do you want Adolf Coors and the Marlboro Man crawling into bed with you?
Well, no. But I sure wouldn't kick Melissa Etheridge out of the sack for doing a beer commercial.
One with lots of muscular women rugby players romping on the screen.
Oh, another liberation movement up Madison Avenue without a paddle.
Assimilation is such an interesting and paradoxical phenomenon to me. Ideally, it's a two-way exchange. The mainstream culture gets enriched by the subculture, and the subculture, which by definition is usually oppressed in some way or another, gains some acceptance and respect. But the way that the process usually works is that the subculture ends up getting watered down and separated from its more radical elements so that it's somehow safe or palatable for the mainstream. And in a way that makes me sad, I've always wanted to believe that we're special, that there's some essential inherent way that we're different from straight people, more artistic, more spiritual, cooler, better dressed. Deep down, I've actually thought that we were more highly evolved than straight people. So I've always been really irked by evidence that we're not.
For example, in this scene, Mo's trusty old one-piece swimming suit has finally sprung its elastic. Lois, the debonair foil to the repressed and nerd-like Mo, is in the dressing room with her as she tries on a new suit.
Jesus! Who'd they design this fucking thing for? I mean, who in their right mind would want to expose this part of their body? Is it too much to ask for a suit that covers my pubic hair?
Here, this one's cut a little lower.
I hate this, Lois. I'm a mature, politically aware lesbian. I know that fat is a feminist issue. I understand how women have impossible standards of appearance shoved down their throats. And I love my body the way it is. Until I have to buy a goddamn bathing suit. Look it! Cellulite! Varicose veins! Pale, flabby thighs!
Jeez, Mo, chill!
I know. I sound like a Kathy cartoon. Don't tell anyone how insecure and unevolved I really am, okay?
Mo, of course you have negative feelings about your body. It's impossible not to in this culture. Cut yourself some slack. You're only making things worse by expecting yourself to be perfectly self-actualized about it all.
Well, maybe you're right, Lois. Thanks for putting it in perspective. So, you have these feelings too?
Watch my stuff, will you? I'm going to try on one of those thongs.
When someone asks Alison when she became a cartoonist, she gives the same answer as when asked when she became a lesbian. I always was one, she says. But she wasn't always a lesbian cartoonist. In fact, all of her early drawings, from age 4 through 20, were drawings of men exclusively.
The way that I saw the world was that girls, even when they were good, were bad. And boys, even when they were bad, were good. And my method of coping with this perverse moral order that I saw was to kind of abdicate my girlhood. I became the opposite of a feminist. I didn't want to be associated with all these downtrodden females. I started carrying a pocket knife and begged to have my hair cut short, and I took up spitting on the playground. I had no illusion that I was a boy, though I liked being mistaken for one, but it was just as clear to me that I wasn't really a girl either. And in a way, the men that I was drawing as a kid, I think, were not so much men as they were just neutral, generic people. And if I could have figured out a way to draw women that didn't somehow make them seem less than people, I would have done it.
It was only after Allison came out as a lesbian during her junior year of college in 1980 that she could draw women. It wasn't simply that she chose not to draw women. She really couldn't draw them with the fluency she drew men. She submitted her first cartoon to a feminist newspaper in 1983.
And although I really love it when a straight fan or reviewer calls my work universal, it also kind of bugs me. Because behind that word universal, I can't help but sense this lurking fear of difference. It's like saying, as long as there's some way I can identify with you, then you're okay. And yes, sure, there's lots of ways that people are all the same, but I think what's really important to explore and to accept are the ways that we're not the same.
In this scene, Mo laments the fact that her parents don't view her job at Mad Women Books, an independent feminist bookstore, as real work. She's joined by Lois, who also works there, and Jazana, the bookstore's owner.
You know, my folks still expect me to marry some man. And until I do, they're going to treat me like a child. Never mind I run a successful independent bookstore.
There's two kinds of parents. The ones who want you to be just like them, and the ones who want you to do everything they never did. And there's no pleasing either of them.
Which kind do you have?
Actually, I trained mine early not to expect anything at all when I refused to fly up from Brownies to Girl Scouts.
All right. Downwardly mobile at age 8.
Parents, career choices, love, relationships, activism, vegetarianism, therapy, sex, and politics are just some of the topics addressed in Dykes to Watch Out For. Allison's biggest challenge is to create something week after week that will hold her readers' attention.
And the hard part isn't so much coming up with interesting plot twists. I can manage that. What's hard is trying to incorporate all of the ideological shifts that our culture goes through into this story that I started telling way back in my lesbian feminist youth.
Allison would like to keep cranking out storylines and drawing her beloved yet flawed characters forever. She wants to grow old with these women, and she wants to keep documenting the richness that is lesbian culture.
I think the one thing people really do have in common with each other, all 6 billion or however many there are of us, is that we're all different. And that the only way to be genuinely universal is to be very, very particular about that difference.
From Urbana, Illinois, for This Way Out, I'm Kimberly Cronick.
In addition to the dozens of print publications that carry Allison Bechtel's Dykes to Watch Out For, the comic strip can be seen online at firebrandbooks.com and at planetout.com. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Donald Herman, Chris Ambidge, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Brian Nunes, Rex Walkner, Alan Rieke, Martin Rice, and Kimberly Cronick contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Gill Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and by Planet Out. From designated contributions from Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For audio cassette information or with any questions or comments about This Way Out, please email us at tworadio@aol.com, visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And please be sure to include the call letters of this station. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on multimedia, then on radio. For Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening on KYDS Sacramento, California, WHUS Storrs, Connecticut, KDHX St. Louis, Missouri, and more than 100 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.